Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Karna Gupta, ITAC President and CEO. Karna, you bring a substantive history of significant and considerable national and international success in entrepreneurship, innovation, and senior executive leadership to this interview. We are indeed fortunate to have you share your many deep experiences with the audience. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Stephen. Happy to be here.
Now, Karna, I know you've recently taken on a new role, but before we get into that, can you profile your key roles throughout your career, important findings and lessons that you wish to share from your many challenges and successes?
Sure. I've been in technology, Stephen. I've been in technology field for almost about 30 years. I worked both in Canadian scene, U.S., as well as a fair bit of international market. In my past, I ran global operations out of U.S., which spanned, pretty much 65 countries across the globe. We had some 6,000 employees. My last role in Canada was heading up Certicom, which is a public company, as their CEO. And since then, I've been doing a lot of board work with various technology companies. My personal passion at this point is really to look at the Canadian technology space and build a framework to make Canadian technology companies successful, not only locally, but in a global scale. So it kind of ties in the ITAC role and, what I'm trying to do with ITAC going forward is pretty much consistent with where my personal interests are. So it's quite challenging and quite interesting in that sense to engage with ITAC at this stage. What I bring to the table in terms of the, is essentially all my life I worked in technology space, built companies, grown companies, startups, large companies, multinationals. So it's a diverse, fairly diverse background and always enjoyed this type of work.
What specific qualities and attributes make for a career success in companies?
For companies, it's, it varies by where you are at. If you look at the Canadian landscape, it's not a lack of innovation or ideas. We have, very strong innovation and ideas in the Canadian technology space coming from various sectors. And pick a sector by vertical, whether it's a financial, health, or any other. There are a lot of new or mobile applications. The issue we often struggle as a small nation is how do you commercialize productize your output into a global product and be successful in a world market. As you know, today to do build business, you need to be a global player. You cannot just operate selling locally or regionally. So the main challenge that the companies face today are essentially how do you commercialize a product that is easily adaptable in various domains, be it east west as our trades are growing, and also the north south, which is our historical and traditional trading partners.
Karna, you've had this sort of amazing career where you've led many organizations and to great success. So when you were looking for people to bring into leadership roles, what specific qualities and attributes were you looking for?
Personally, whenever I built a team or all of my, teams have been successful over the years, the biggest issue really comes down to is the passion for what you do. If you're not really passionate about what you're working on, it's very hard to be successful. It turns into a job. And the difference between people who are passionate about what they do, the success metrics is much more easy to come than people who look at it as jobs. So that's the first, one of the first things you look for when you build a team is, are people passionate about it? The second issue really is the experiential, the skill set, the training, the underlying education, all of that come together. And then you have, the teamwork. End of the day, building a business is a team effort. You can't really do it by yourself. Even though a lot of the young companies and entrepreneurship, that we see are one person starting a business. But to scale and grow, at the end of the day, you need to be able to build a team around you that has a similar values, has a similar passion for things to be successful, and then you can move it forward. So those would be the human side is very critical, along with the underlying training and everything else.
Now, how did you become the new president and CEO of ITAC?
The presidency of ITAC is, I've been working in this space for quite some time, and ITAC at this stage, the past president CEO retired. They're looking for somebody who was in the private sector. I ran businesses not only nationally but also globally, and it fit my profile. And given ITAC's current mandate, which is really to work with a, you know, be the industry spokesperson as at large, and also promote the technology adoption both in private and public sector, and create a framework for global positioning for Canadian technology, it's pretty consistent with where my personal interest and passion is. And I've been, last 2 years, I've been doing a lot of board work. I've been mentoring a lot of young companies. I've been working with some universities and also offering some help to government as and when they need it on some of the policy domains. So there was a good match between what ITAC was looking for and what I was doing on my own. So it kind of, when they came calling, you know, after a few months of discussion, we realized, you know, there is a fair bit of consistency here, and it would make sense for me at this stage of my career to take this on and look at it as a challenge and move this forward.
So you've recently taken on this new role, and it's going to be a challenging role, and there's going to also be great opportunities available for the Canadian industry. So what's your vision for ITAC? And by the way, what does ITAC stand for?
Information Technology Association of Canada. So ITAC, you know, has been around for almost 60 years. I think this is the 60th anniversary of ITAC. So ITAC is the preeminent voice of the information technology, you know, the companies in Canada. It is all privately funded by members, which is the industry at large. And you know, most of the members work with ITAC on various domains. So if you think about some of the horizontal domains, it would be a lot of the issues are relative to policy issues dealing with the government in terms of technology adoption, and all of the input that goes into the digital strategy that Canada and each of the provinces are working on. So ITAC becomes the voice of the industry. Then if you look at a vertical domain, ITAC does have a focus on specific areas like health. We also have a specific focus in areas like you know, cybersecurity. So we provide some of the specific areas some higher level of competency and a common forum for the companies to come together and have a common voice to put forward. So it serves a significant purpose in the industry. And you know, going forward, my personal view is not only we need to continue to do that, but also on top add on, you know, the whole adoption of technology in our lives, you know, improve why technology should be adopted at a higher pace and scale both in the private and the public sector, and find a way to showcase Canadian technology globally. I mean, you cannot really be successful unless you get into a, you know, global scale of producing products and solutions.
So how large is ITAC? In other words, how many members belong to your association?
I think total, you know, you caught me there, because total membership probably runs in a couple of hundreds. You know, if you take any of the companies that are Canadian companies, from TELUS to Bell Canada to Rogers, all of the Canadian companies, CGI, they're all part of the member, but also the multinationals like Microsoft, Intel, who have a very strong Canadian presence, SAP, you know, you pick a name, Google, they're all members. Then you got the mid-size companies, you know, public companies, several of them are there. Then you got a lot of young companies that are early stage, join ITAC for various parts of the programs we offer. We have a certain diversity program. We have some knowledge worker programs. So various programs does provide some additional services to our constituent members. So the membership varies from a very small company to mid-size to very large Canadian and multinationals. It's a pretty diverse membership.
And do you work with other associations like KIPS or the ICT Sector Council of Canada and other groups out there?
Yeah, we do work with a lot of them, and we have agreements with a lot of them. We do some common events and programs with them. KIPS, for example, in fact, is in the Toronto chapter, is co-located with us, so there is a fair bit of exchange with them. So we do work with various associations, not only nationally, but also at a provincial level. You know, for example, the next week, the Alberta IT community is hosting during the some of the ITAC board meeting, and they'll showcase some of the Alberta ICD technology for all of our members. So we do work with all of the regional organizations that's out there in each of the provinces, but also national ones.
Now, from your current role, what do you hope to achieve, and how do you bring about value to your stakeholders?
The value comes in various formats. You know, some of the, you know, it varies by the type of organization you are. Some companies are very active in the policy front, so they do work with our staff on some major policy issues that cut across all of the governments, be it on the procurement side or some specific, you know, digital strategy, you know, statements and the budget process. Even on some of the tax issues, we provide a lot of the input on behalf of the industry after consulting with the industry body. Then we also provide some of the services in companies in terms of some of the standards area. So specific business standards, whether it's on cybersecurity or privacy, we do work with the industry bodies on some of the common positions that are necessary as governments and other bodies look at what is critical in terms of moving forward. Same thing would be on health sector. We do consult, you know, whole range of companies that are involved in the technology space in health to come up with some common positioning that are consistent and are relevant to our constituents. So it varies by who the audience is. And it varies by sector, and it also varies by size of the corporation. Mid to small size corporations will look for certain value set, whereas the larger organizations, you know, would look for some other value set. So it does vary. And members are quite active. So, you know, the impression I don't want to put on the table is we go away and do all the work by ourselves. It is a engaging process, meaning the member organizations, their key personnel working on these files will work with our people, and we facilitate, so together we put together a proposal that's relevant to our membership.
You know, there's about 30 to 40,000 businesses in the technology sector here in Canada, you know, representing a significant chunk of change in revenue and GDP in the Canadian economy. If these companies want to get involved with ITAC in some way, perhaps participating on a committee or board or joining the Information Technology Association of Canada, what's the best way to do that?
I think the best way, if it is a reach-in coming to us, the best way to engage is, you know, come to our website, and it's pretty clearly listed how to, you know, get hold of us and any company. And we do get a lot of inbound members coming in, say, hey, look, you know, we're interested in, you know, in this area, how can we engage? And we would engage with them, and they become members, and they become participants in the process. So engagement part is both ways. One, we also go out to certain members saying, you know, you've been in this country operating, you know, you're of this size, your continued presence has created so many jobs and in a year force in the economy, you should be part of the Canadian Technology Association like ITAC and play a role in continued development of the ecosystem. And so it's a bidirectional. We do a reach out to constituent base. At the same time, often the companies would approach us saying, look, we want to get engaged. So both are working.
Do you do need lobbying on behalf of the industry to the governments, either at the provincial or federal level?
No, I don't. We don't do any lobbying per se. You know, we're not lobbyists. We talk on behalf of the industry in submission of specific positions and papers and some of the policy points that are relevant to the industry for consideration by the government as they produce either, you know, new legislation or process change, you know, they would take that into account because it makes it easier for both sides, you know, if you look at the government, for them to deal with ITAC and thereby reaching out to the industry to create a common place rather than reaching out to multiple companies and finding out what makes most sense, right? It's just a, you know, efficiency equation in that case from government's point of view, looking to ITAC to be the voice. And I think the companies, by the same token, are very happy that we kind of do the overall coordination and put this forward. So we're not lobbyists. We are the voice of the industry when it comes to public sector input, both in terms of policy issues, legislations, or any process change.
So what's your assessment of IT industry challenges and then their solutions?
I think there are various challenges, and if you look at the IT industry, you know, the very first thing, the way I would look at it, you need to kind of segment it, right? And if you look at a very large corporations to young ones, the challenges do vary. You know, it's based on where you are on your life cycle. Very large organizations and mid-size and up, you know, sustainability is a big issue in terms of, you know, continued building out the business and continue to support a ecosystem that not only helps them but helps the broader community at large. So there are different set of issues there. If you're looking at a younger IT companies, the issues are, you know, very different. You are day in, day out. You're trying to build business. You're trying to get the product out the door, and you want to be relevant to the market in terms of what you produce. So the challenges do vary, and it's very much a function of life cycle of the corporation. And then you have some intersect points in terms of the market verticals they're looking at. Are you creating something for healthcare? Are you creating something for, you know, mobile computing? Or are you creating something for, you know, financial area? Are you creating something for some other domain? So by domain, the challenges get even more complex. It's not a easy map, but the, you know, broadly the issues needs to be always looked at by sector and bringing down some of these, you know, triangulate some of these, you know, verticals into where the common issues are.
You know, sometimes you see, you know, policy or not necessary policy, but statements coming out of the ICT Sector Council of Canada about, you know, skill shortages, and the Canadian Council on Tomorrow's ICT Skills came out with same sort of similar statements. Do you see that same kind of challenge, not having enough skilled workers or people who have the appropriate skills for the IT industry?
I think these are real issues, largely because it's not only you have to start early, because the whole ICT sector, if you look at the technology sector, attracting the talent pool at an early stage into the university and training programs, that's where we need to seed it. So it needs to be start much earlier than later on, and you're kind of looking at it saying, you know, we don't have enough resources, therefore what are our choices and options? And then you also have a, you know, the population mix change, whether it's an immigration or something, is what type of skill pool and skill sets are coming in. So there is a bunch of issues that are, they're all related, but they all support or solve the problem of the IT sector skill shortage and the type of skill set you'd need going forward. But I do believe that most of the universities are very aware of it. If you look at most of the universities, they do have a, you know, fairly strong program on the technology field now, and most of the large corporations have now, you know, understand the issues and put a lot more, you know, a lot more support behind training programs and everything else. So there is a, you know, there is a good recognition that we need to move with this domain. It's not necessarily IT. It's really technology. Technology skill set needs to be continually reharvested in the country, because, you know, we are moving from a natural resource to a human resource based, you know, model, more and more as we move forward in the millennium, right? So you need to continue to reharvest that part of the that part of your you know, the assets that you have.
We've talked about some of the challenges within the industry. What do you see as some of the opportunities in the industry?
I mean, opportunities are significant, because, you know, we do have a very strong infrastructure. You know, it continues to build out. You know, we're still looking at a, you know, broadband to every household, every rural area. So there is a whole bunch of work that's unfolding there. But if you look at country as a whole and you compare us to the rest of the world, we do have a, you know, good information technology infrastructure. So the whole collaboration and innovation is a lot better done here in Canada than a lot of the other nations. So we could, opportunity-wise, we could attract a lot more talent pool coming into the country to use these facilities that we have. And you know, and it's a real asset for us as a nation. So I think there are tremendous opportunities in, for Canada and as a nation to become a major powerhouse in the technology domain if we continue to build out these underlying infrastructure for us. And it is quite amazing when you travel the world, realize, you know, how our nation is connected compared to a lot of the other nations.
What do you see as the top challenges facing business executives today, and what are some possible solutions?
I think the most significant challenge is having the right skill set, and, you know, having the right skill set, and you know, if you have the right skill set and the underlying technology there, you know, the innovation continues to happen. And I think the most executive today, I mean, the companies I led, we used to run innovation programs internal to the company. So you challenge your technical team continually and your business team, how else can you solve a business problem? You know, if there are a set of problems out there, let's define the problems first and then, you know, ask the team to, okay, go out and solve it. So that part of the work is the primary issue. You know, most senior executives always struggle with that. How do I continue to innovate and stay ahead of the game and commercialize and productize the what we develop? And to do that, you need not only ideas, but you need the strong skill set, you need strong team to deliver on the ideas.
And then on the other side of the coin then, sort of what are the top opportunities facing business executives today, and how can they be actioned?
I think for Canadian businesses, the strongest card at this point is to build a global trade, because we as a nation are looked favorably almost anywhere in the world. I mean, you know, over the years, I have almost traveled, you know, most part of the world, most of the nations out in the world, and, you know, Canadians are welcome everywhere. So most countries want to do business with us. So we have a very strong connection into the, you know, various nations, trading nations around the world. And the opportunities are to, you know, properly harvest them and have the game plan to execute there. You know, you can't really build a business in a remote location somewhere in Asia, sitting in, you know, Vancouver or Toronto or Montreal. You need to build a team that would be local, but it can be managed here or there. But you need to have a game plan how to capitalize on a global business. And those opportunities, you know, most Canadian companies and executives can seize upon, because we're welcome for trade almost everywhere.
Again, if you look at your background, you know, in so many domains, all great quantities of success, and, you know, really demonstrating great insight. So if you were looking to your crystal ball, Karna, what would be your predictions for technology trends and events to watch for?
I think there's several. I mean, it's a you know, $6 million question, right? You know, everybody has a set of opinions on, and it's always an opinion of one, right? There is never an alignment on a lot of these issues. So mine is my personal opinion, and it's an opinion of one. I mean, the areas that we need to look at going forward from a trend point of view, you know, the biggest issue is still the mobility. And mobility, not in terms of the mobile phone or anything else. Everything is mobile, whether it's a mobile computing, whether it's a healthcare, you know, information, or even your, you know, healthcare, some of the process improved, you know, the in a hospital, the workflow is getting done on mobile devices. So the whole mobility area still has a long ways to go. And I think it is a significant, you know, trend that'll transform, you know, us as a nation and the whole civilization. I truly believe there is a, you know, things going to happen we have not seen, from a mobile computing to transactions to finance to healthcare. It'll be all mobility centric. The second, you know, the other side of it that goes with it is a significant area from a trend point of view is how do you, you know, protect that with all of the issues relative to privacy and security and a protection of data and information and data residency of, you know, this country versus can your data reside in other countries. So there's a bunch of issues arise because of the mobility growth and how the world is linked. So that is another area of trend in terms of we'll continue to build out. And the third one, if I had to pick a third one in a trend wise, my opinion would be what's unfolding and generally speaking in the health segment, right? So health segment, both in terms of the instrumentation, what is used for medical devices versus what is used to prevent and monitor health of the patients, and the technology, services, and devices to deliver it are all changing. And that is another area that is a tremendous amount of investment and opportunity is going to come from over the next several years.
There's an organization called IFIP, the International Federation for Information Processing, and they are founded under the auspices of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, Cultural Organization in 1960. In fact, held their first World Computing Congress in 1959, and subsequent to that, they've been holding these biannual events called the World Computing Congress. This year, they're holding the World CIO Forum, which is almost like the World Economic Forum, but for IT executives. So why would IT executives want to attend such a collaborative forum of all these countries coming together, this World CIO Forum?
Yeah, I think the World CIO Forum, I think this is the first one, if I'm not mistaken, in China that's coming up in Shenzhen or somewhere. And the topically, it is a right thing to do, because if you look at the CIOs or any of these companies, major organizations, you do not want to have different things in different places. You know, you need to have a common set of baseline as you come together and deliver these solutions and technologies for tomorrow. So there is a whole standards domain that open up in various subcommittees and work committees that will come out of this will lead to a better place. You know, it'll be a lot more efficient. It'll be a lot more robust because you got all of these inputs from various places, and it'll be consistent. So you as a you as an individual, tomorrow you would be a citizen of a digital world, right? And you could be anywhere, but everything dealt to you as you consume or as you partake in it. There will be a level of consistency around it. So you're not relearning how to use telephone as you go from country to country. So that level of discussion is important, both from a consuming point of view, as you and I individuals will consume the technologies tomorrow as a digital citizen, but also in terms of delivery by the people who are developing these things to bring forward. So these high-level forums are important to create some basic understanding, common language, to understand what the issues are, same taxonomy around various things. So those are important sessions. I think these are good.
There's also the practitioner side. That is, there's about 31 million IT practitioners or professionals around the world, and right now they're not really organized into a recognized profession. So what are your thoughts on computing as a recognized profession, like medicine and law, with demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, and recognized credentials? Some of this is occurring in different countries around the world, but what are your thoughts of having this on a global scale, having computing recognized as a profession?
It's a tough one, because unless some of the other pieces are done, it's going to be very hard. In the same way, if you look at the business schools, the code of business is not exactly the same taught in every school necessarily. So there has to be. So when you come out with an MBA, you should have the same as a doctor's, have a common base. Regardless of which country, you need to recertify, but the language and the understandings are same. Same thing will happen in most professions as they continue to specialize and get carved out as a specific sector. So I have no doubt, if you look down the path over future, the computing could be one of them, and I don't know when that'll happen, but these are always good things, more common understanding and common language people use around the world in any of the profession is useful, because it improves efficiency and increases the velocity of innovation and delivering new product to the market. So this, it is always good to have some level of common language on the table. It doesn't act as a barrier downstream. So it is a good thing, but I have no idea when these will happen. But over time, as groups get organized, I'm sure some of these will come to fruition.
Do you have any stories to share of professionals taking on projects outside of their companies they work for, projects that have a societal cause, something that maybe advances the human condition in some way?
Yeah, I think it's very important because we are end of the day, you know, even if you come to work, you know, no matter what number of hours you put in, you're still part of a, you know, broader social fabric. So you need to find a way how you connect and contribute to it. You know, it's a philosophical question in my mind. We've been all put on this, you know, are in this planet, and if we cannot advance something certain way, you know, it's a waste effort, right? So you need to connect, you know, at a family level, at a community level, and a broader social level. And I think, you know, generally it happens, you know, when I look at what's happening in any of the countries, it does happen. You know, I mean, people are connected in the social networks. The people are connected in changing things. I mean, you just look at what happened, you know, right through from a political point of view with the Arab Spring and everything else. It's all people being connected and having a common voice, common cause, and it starts something. And it doesn't have to be political in nature. It could be anything. And so my sense is engaging outside your work and other issues that you're passionate about is a good thing. And most companies endorse that. You know, most companies would want to also sponsor sometimes or engage in some of these events. So it's actually good.
Karna, as I indicated before, you've had tremendous success as a very successful leader. You sit on many boards. You're the CEO of the preeminent association in Canada in terms of representing the IT industry. You've got this remarkable history of success heading up corporations. You've got this great ability to take on any task and to innovate and to lead that organization. You know, if you take all of those different things that you've done throughout your career, you must have come across some interesting stories that you can share, maybe something surprising or unexpected or amazing from your work.
I mean, there are a lot of stories. You know, I mean, they vary by, you know, a lot of them are, you know, not business related. You know, I travel the world quite a bit, and you know, when you go to you know, countries, any country in East Europe or Moscow or China, the, you know, there is no particular story that jumps out that I say, wow, that was an interesting one and the only one I need to remember. But each one of them, as I encountered, you know, I traveled all of these countries, are quite unique, and they're all, end of the day, the, you know, what jumps out at all times is there is a human connection to them. None of them are, you know, just without any human connection. And they are, sometimes they're interesting, good or bad, right? So it is really comes down to the human aspect that you come across in each of the countries, creates a unique set of memories as you kind of move through your journey. Unfortunately, I can't give you one specific story that, you know, that travel to South Africa, you know, came across something very interesting, and it's very unique and never to be repeated again. You know, I just don't have something like that offhand in my head.
I also noticed that you are on the board of a regional incubation center. Can you sort of describe that work in any way at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. In Ontario, there are, you know, several regional incubation centers. I sit in board of one of them, and I think there is about 14. And what they do is, you know, basically provide a storefront to local entrepreneurs to come in and get vetted and put together the proper story, the value proposition, provide them some context on market research, and if need be, often provide some executive support on a volunteer basis. So some of the executives, even I volunteered for some of the other incubation centers in my past life, is young companies will come in, and if you're interested as a volunteer and the company feels your background fits their needs, you spend some number of hours with the company and helping them to do what they need to do, whether, you know, creating a proper pitch for raising money or helping them put together a coherent marketing strategy or, you know, introducing them to potential clients or sourcing them some talents they might be desperately lacking. So it's a broad range. So these incubation centers is to help incubate these companies regionally, in Ontario's case, in those areas, which will help create jobs and and economic activity for that region.
Do these incubation centers also have links to angel and VC?
Yes, they do. I mean, the way they would operate is, you know, not formal links. What they do is they will go through the, you know, series of companies coming through the door. So if you assume there is a funnel and there's 10 companies coming in the door and to the storefront, you work with them at some point in time. You say, okay, these three are pretty mature. We will create a breakfast meeting or a lunch gathering for some local angels or VCs to come in, and we'll have these three companies pitch. You cannot, as an incubation center, you cannot do it for the company. They have to pitch and earn their funds, and the VC will have to, you know, buy the story and agree that it is our angel, that this is a reasonable investment to make. But you can create the almost like a matchmaking model based on the process, so you create a common platform for them to come together. So it is very much part of the process.
Sounds like a great opportunity for young startups to get engaged, to receive mentorship.
Yes, it is, because it has been, you know, it's not here. It has been very successfully done in other countries. If you look at Cambridge University, they probably have one of the, very successful ecosystem built around incubation, entrepreneurship, and funding. And so the universities, the VCs, the local angels, as well as the private sector has come together to create that. So the model has been successful in other countries. It's not a and proven. And I think the companies that have gone through this, I'm sure there are companies that will, you know, raise their hand to do the testimonial saying, yep, you know, I benefited from this process. It is actually pretty neat.
So I can see now in 5 years, Karna, you're the CEO and president of the ITAC group, and Canada's GDP as a result rises. Our rankings in the world rise with the OECD. You've completed your mission and your goals with ITAC. What's your next step?
I think the next steps are fairly, you know, straightforward. You know, I mean, straightforward for me. You know, I need to break it down into smaller pieces. As I come on board, ITAC has its charter, and it has, you know, has done very significant work in these areas and for the current constituents. My role would be coming and say, how do we build on that and where do we need to go? So the, you know, one of the things would be, can we create a framework for Canadian technologies to be much easily and promoted much more robustly around the globe to be successful? Because for companies to be successful, they need to have an international market presence and access to the market and a reach out. So that would be, you know, one of the areas, you know, definitely, you know, I'd be looking at. The second is, you know, you got a lot of young and mid-sized companies. They may or may not get an immediate value from a policy change. They benefit from the tax change, but the policy change is a little further down their list of priorities. So their issue would be, how do you get them connected to larger community of companies, the broader companies in terms of the bigger companies, so they have access to grow and partner with other set of companies to move forward. So they have a value equation. So both locally and internationally, you know, that is the one part I want to play a major role in terms of carving out how do we help and create an underlying framework for our technology companies to be successful, not at the expense of what we do today, but as on top of what we do today, because what we do today is extremely valuable, and it has proven to be valuable, and our current members, you know, they come back year after year because it is important to them. So that's one aspect. Then you got the whole area of other issues that we need to look at is the diversity within the workforce in ICT. You know the whole gender diversity is an issue that needs to be addressed. The knowledge and the skill area, it needs to be addressed. So we're starting to actively look at those files, how we can help and contribute in those areas. So there's a couple areas. So, you know, it's not I cannot measure 6 years out. You know, being in a private sector business, I need to have a fairly measurable goal as we move through, you know, next 6 months, next 9 months, how are we moving the yardstick, and you know, things will come together over 5 years, I'm sure.
Now, we've covered a lot of different areas throughout this discussion here today. Now, I'm going to kind of turn the tables, and that is, if you were doing this interview, what three questions should I have asked you, and then what would be your answers?
I think we kind of went through, you know, most of the relevant issues today. There is, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, what are the, you know, three specific questions I would have asked, because we kind of, you know, went around pretty large space and covered quite a bit of grounds in terms of the last, you know, last 40 minutes of discussion or so. I think, you know, the one thing that probably stand out if I was in your chair asking a question to somebody like myself would be, you know, to how do you get there kind of thing, you know, what is your roadmap, and you know, how do you get there from here to there? Some of these are big issues and there's a lot of things happening at the same time, you know, what kind of a roadmap are you thinking about? And I'll answer the question as well, you know, if that were the question, the issue really would be, look, you know, just got here, it's not even a month, it's been, you know, two weeks and a bit. The issue is recognition of what we have, the strengths. So we're going to be engaging not only internally, but also with our board and constituent members to look at, you know, what is the overall strategy going forward in terms of broadening out the things we do. So lay out a strategy map, have some specific, you know, goals and milestones attached to it that are, you know, achievable within a limited set of time, and then build on them rather than having a, you know, a philosophical goal that, you know, 6 years, I want to be, you know, X. I think that would be too much of a grand plan. I think we need to have a year one plan, a year two plan kind of thing, and go from there.
I guess that really sounds like SMART objectives. That is specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the way the business is, you know, is run today. You know, you don't have, you know, I mean, when I started back in 70s, there used to be 7 year, 10 year plans. You know, there are some, you know, 10 year plans in terms of vision exercise, but by and large, executional plans are typically, you know, 2 to 3 years most, right? And world changes in 6 months and you redo it. So you got to be relevant to the time you live in, and the goals you put out has to be, you know, tied to those.
I guess you're always doing an environmental scan or a SWOT analysis almost on an ongoing basis, just to be agile.
Yes, we do. I mean, it is a very much part of, and our member, you know, it's not only us. I think the constituent members, they all come with issues, right? So if one company issues are something different, we'll hear about it right away, because, you know, they are working with us day in, day out. So it's a very dynamic in that sense, because the issues coming are from all different types of companies. They could be, you know, telecommunication company to a hardware company to a, you know, medical devices company. So things could be very different in each of these spaces, and they're very relevant to the times of those companies and the problems they're facing. So we generally tend to get a lot of input that way, so it makes it easier for us to be in tune with what's unfolding in various sectors we're engaged in.
You know, Karna, it's clear that you're a passionate and highly successful entrepreneur and innovator and senior executive, and we talked about a lot of your sort of business goals and the goals for the industry and so on. How about you personally? You know, like, what drives your passion outside of work?
I'm a little bit of a health nut. So I do personally, to keep my mind fit, I need to work out regularly, and I spend rest of my time, and it's a very tight family, you know, I come from. So we're a very close knit family, and, you know, they're spread out all over the world. And, so we are, you know, always engaged and, traveling, visiting each other. So that's a big part of my life is, you know, outside of my work is making sure, you know, we're engaged at a family level as much as we can.
Well, Karna, thank you for coming in today to do this interview, and we will continue to follow your significant national, global, and historical contributions. As I indicated, you have a great history of national and international success and entrepreneurship, innovation, and senior executive leadership, and you brought all of this to this interview. So we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
No, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate you for this interview, and thanks for the time I had on this call.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Karna Gupta, ITAC President and CEO.